Welcome to our special edition Meet the Candidates Forum on the Raccoon Valley Radio Network. If you miss any of this program or would like to hear it again, you can listen on demand at raccoonvalleyradio.com. The Raccoon Valley Radio Network news team will introduce you to the candidates and interview each of them coming up next on this special edition Meet the Candidates Forum on the Raccoon Valley Radio Network.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Welcome to the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine on KDLS. I'm Dallas County News Director Brandon Shanahan. In this program, we are focusing on the contested races for Dallas County. We've asked each candidate the same questions, and the candidates are allowed a maximum of 2 minutes to respond to each question. In the first portion of this program, we will interview the three candidates running for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District seat. The interviews are done with Guthrie County News Director Samantha McIntosh.
Representative Cindy Axney, you are the Democratic candidate running for re-election for Iowa's U.S. 3rd congressional seat. To start off, what accomplishments do you think you've had in your first term as representative?
Well, it's certainly been a first term, of course, starting out in a government shutdown and then moving right into the floods along the Missouri, and we're ending up now in a global pandemic. So I'll be honest, I'm very proud of the work that I've been able to get support from across the aisle these past 2 years to get some really important provisions signed into law for Iowa. First and foremost is flood relief. You know, when devastating floods came to Iowa, I fought to get $3 billion for Midwest flooding and change policy to cover uninsured grain in bins to make sure that our farmers could stay afloat. Certainly a couple of tax extenders that I was able to push through to lower the cost of health care, including the health care tax repeals that I was able to get through that secured the repeal of three different health care taxes on middle-class Iowans and their families. We got that removed. And then the biofuels tax extender. I helped revive this tax credit and extend the second-gen biofuel tax credit as well to support our critical industry that's been unfortunately under attack over the last couple of years. And then the USMCA worked very hard to push that with the House Working Group and the White House to reach a deal that helped us provide market stability for our farmers. So some very key pieces around healthcare and agriculture and making sure that people could recover after a major disaster. But in addition, I fought to get a lot of bills passed that would deliver results for Iowa. But unfortunately, these are sitting at the feet of the Senate because they haven't taken them up. You know, we passed legislation out of the House that I wrote to make healthcare more affordable, that lowers the cost of prescription drugs, and helps families save for childcare. I also fought for rural broadband expansion, an investment of $100 billion in our bill that would connect every single person in Iowa and make sure that we don't fall behind, whether it's our kids' education, telehealth, or economically. And I wrote bills to help rural entrepreneurs, to protect jobs from outsourcing, and to keep Iowans in their home during COVID-19. And finally, I stood up to my party to fight for what's right for Iowa.
Well, I'm sorry, it's a big question. 2 minutes doesn't really do it justice for what all's been going on in your first term. But what is your platform for re-election?
Well, listen, I'm continuing to run because we need to make sure that we have somebody in Washington who's fighting for the issues in Iowa. And certainly with everything that we've seen from the derecho to the public health crisis we're in, we need to continue to respond to these crises, but also make sure that we address the issues that they've exposed. Protecting Iowans and their access to affordable health care, especially for our seniors and folks with pre-existing conditions, those who can't afford their prescription drugs. We've got to expand economic opportunity as that's taken a hit as a result of COVID, certainly in both rural and metro areas across the state. Looking out for everybody, small businesses, farmers, our workers, and of course we need to grow our economy. So we need to pass an infrastructure bill and many other pieces of legislation that will help us with that. So we've got a lot to do when it comes to this, and that includes making sure that we don't give more tax cuts to wealthy corporations and the richest among us, but making sure that middle-class families actually have a reasonable tax base for them, not just for the wealthiest. So we've got a lot to do in that capacity, as well as lowering the cost of prescription drugs and keeping our hospitals and rural health care open, because we have seen difficulty with that, and I've been fighting to make that happen. So, it's a big platform, Sam, but there's a lot to do both economically and with our health care, and certainly to bring connectivity to everyone. So I'm going to continue to be out here fighting for those issues.
And what do you think is the solution to our economic recession amid this COVID-19 pandemic?
We're not going to solve this economic crisis until we get a handle on COVID-19 and really stop the spread of this virus. This is a public health emergency first and foremost. We still have thousands of Iowans out of work. They're worried about being able to keep a roof over their head. Certainly, our schools, our health centers, our small businesses are on the front line of this. And recently, we've seen that Iowa's become a frequent entry in the national ranking of new COVID cases per capita. So that's not good. This crisis is not over. We need to make sure that we're addressing the healthcare aspect of that for families, workers, and small businesses so they can get through this safely. But it also means we need to pass a new COVID relief package out of Washington as soon as possible, something that I've been continuing to push for, a real package that can actually get done, one that both Republicans and Democrats can get behind, so we can get relief into the hands of families, so that we can make sure we shore up our healthcare providers, our hospitals and clinics, and so that we can support PPE for our schools, our children, and our teachers, and of course, make sure that we keep businesses open with things like our Restaurant Act, and things like my Rural Equal Aid Act that gives equal opportunity for rural businesses to have the same type of loan forgiveness as the PPP gave to other businesses. So there's a lot that needs to get done, and we've got to make sure that this package gets us through to the end of the year and keeps people whole and allows us to start putting some growth pieces back into place, like I mentioned, like bills like infrastructure to put people back to work in good paying.
What do you think of the Senate's push to appoint a new Supreme Court justice over passing another coronavirus stimulus package?
I think the priority should be with the people of America, keeping them healthy, safe, and putting our economy back in place. And so that should be the priority. I certainly wish, too, that we had been able to take some time to actually mourn Justice Ginsburg's life. She was a trailblazer. She cut a path for people like me to be able to pursue careers like this and challenge the status quo. So she'll be missed. But I would tell you, this rush to confirm a Supreme Court justice has highlighted the blatant examples of hypocrisy from our Senate Republicans. Sets a clear understanding of the rules that they would follow 4 years ago, only to do the exact opposite now. It's really no wonder that Iowans and Americans feel inclined not to trust politicians. You know, back in 2016, Chuck Grassley said, it only makes sense we defer to the American people who will elect a new president to select the next Supreme Court justice. And Joni Ernst said the same thing, that it was absolutely fair to expect Trump to go through this cycle without making a new court appointment. Now both senators are doing the exact opposite and pretending somehow that's consistent. We need leaders who are always going to be truthful, who aren't going to flip-flop on the issues, who are not going to do something that's better for their party but not good for our country. You can't just pick and choose when you want to put policy into place. So I want to make sure that, you know, we move forward in the right way, but I certainly don't appreciate the hypocrisy that we're seeing right now.
Well, to wrap up our interview, is there anything else that you'd like to say to voters before Election Day?
Absolutely. 2 years ago, this campaign was all about health care. That's why I ran for it, because I thought our representation was voting against our interests. Votes were being taken to take away our health care, to privatize Medicare, to give tax breaks to the ultra wealthy, and that just doesn't represent who we are and the values of Central and Southwest Iowa. So over the past 2 years, I've shown I'm independent. I'm a voice for Iowa that's willing to stand up to my party when they're doing things that are wrong for our state. And I work across the aisle to get things done. 75% of my votes in Congress were bipartisan. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce endorsed me and named me the most bipartisan member of Congress from Iowa. And I've been named the most accessible freshman member of Congress because I held almost 60 town halls in my first year of office, visiting every county every month. So I'm going to stand up and continue to fight in Congress for policies that protect Iowans, give us opportunity for health care, but also level the playing field for our families to help us get good jobs, protect our families, and strengthen our farming and producer industries. So I will be there to hold corporations accountable for shipping jobs overseas. I'm going to help invest in Iowa's infrastructure, support our small businesses and rural entrepreneurs, and absolutely support our middle-class families no matter what's going on in Washington.
Brian Jack Holder, you're the Libertarian candidate for U.S. House District 3 here in Iowa. To start off, would you like to share a bit of your background prior to running in this election?
Yes, I'm currently 47 years old. I grew up in the Council Bluffs area, been a lifelong resident of Pottawatomie County, graduated from St. Albert High School, Iowa Western Community College, Bellevue University in Bellevue, Nebraska, and then I earned a law degree at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. So I've been a photographer and a videographer most of my life. I started out in the family business as a child, helping my dad out. And so the last, I graduated law school in 98. So for the last 22 years, I've worked full-time in the family photography business. I do have a son who's 21 years old, and he's a senior in college right now at UNO. So, but I'm a single dad. So I know the struggles that single parents have to go through raising their family and working, and it's a challenge in today's society, but my son turned out okay. So
what is your platform for election?
The main issue that I've been focusing on for the last 6 years is that we're underrepresented now in the U.S. House of Representatives. Less than 100 years ago, they capped the size of the House at 435 districts. And a century ago, Iowa had 11 congressional representatives, and now we only have 4. And so even the 3rd district here, our representatives, the former David Young, the Republican, and Cindy, each one established an office in Council Bluffs, an office in Creston, and an office in Des Moines. And I think that pretty much proves the case that we're underrepresented, that our representative has to have 3 separate offices here in the district. So my idea is to divide the district into 3 smaller ones. So we would actually vote for a representative to be in Council Bluffs and to be in Creston and in Des Moines. And they've pretty much proved through the pandemic that our representatives don't need to go to Washington to vote on bills. You know, they can do their conference work, their committee work through Zoom and through the internet. They can vote remotely. And so it's sort of, you know, there's really no need for all of them to go to Washington. And because that's what leads to a lot of the problems, the corruption that we hear about, is that they go away to the swamp and then they get sort of taken in by it. So my main thing is dividing the district into smaller ones. So in an alternate reality, if I was elected, I would hire David and Cindy to work with all of us and to represent all of us. So,
and what do you think is the solution for the economic recession amid this COVID-19 pandemic?
Obviously, there have been great dislocations in our economy, dozens of millions of people out of work. The government's tried to handle this as best as they can by giving the stimulus to individual taxpayers for the Payroll Protection Act, and they've done some other things, but you know, that $1,200, most of us use that up as soon as we got it to help pay for our bills. Even myself, I've been impacted by the pandemic as a photographer and a videographer. I filmed 100 basketball games last winter. Well, I was planning on filming 20 soccer matches in the spring. I have advertisers that pay me to produce this content, and I was unable to work just because they canceled the soccer season. But thankfully now I'm back filming again. I've filmed four high school football games and four volleyball matches in the last month. And most people are doing the social distancing properly. You have to wear a mask to attend the high school sporting events. And hopefully they come out with a vaccine that's safe and effective within the next year.
What do you think of the Senate's push to appoint a new Supreme Court justice versus passing another coronavirus stimulus package?
Well, I think our people that we elect to Congress ought to be talented enough to walk and chew gum at the same time. There's no reason they can't do both. You know, it's the both parties have sort of dragged themselves out on this Heroes Act that they want to pass to help us out some more. The Supreme Court appointment, you know, I remember the Republicans dragging their feet and not having a hearing for Merrick Garland after Justice Scalia passed away in 2016. And now they want to rush through an appointment. I think the Republicans are going to get her nomination done before the election just so that Trump can put another member on the Supreme Court. But I don't see the reason why they can't work on both issues at the same time. We're paying our U.S. representatives and our senators about $175,000 a year, and their job is to get these things taken care of. You know, it's not good to have a member missing from the Supreme Court when there's nine of them, because that can lead to 4-4, you know, a log jam in the process. And, you know, they need to have that tie-breaking ninth vote. So,
well, to wrap up our interview, is there anything else you'd like to say to voters ahead of Election Day?
Yes, I'm just an average citizen. That I'm not an attorney, by the way, but I do have a law degree. But more of us need to get involved in running for local office, for state office, and for federal office. Because, you know, people are going to continue voting for the lesser of two evils unless they see there's a third choice that has to do with liberty and justice for all of us. So one last thing I will say is that this is the fourth time I've run and been on the ballot, and public TV is having a debate tonight with David and Cindy, but I'm not included in that debate. And so it's very difficult for a third-party candidate like myself to get more than single digits in the election just because of the fact you're not given the same equal opportunities to participate in forums and debates. But I thank you guys so much for letting me come here today and to speak with all the voters. So my name is Brian Jack Holder, and I'm the Libertarian candidate for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. And I want everybody to get out there and vote safely, either before or on November 3rd.
David Young, you are the Republican candidate running for the U.S. Congressional seat for Iowa's 3rd District. To start off, would you like to share a bit about your background prior to running for the seat this election?
Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here, and I was born and raised and graduated, and my first jobs were here in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. I was born and raised in Van Meter and graduated from Drake University, and before I ran for Congress in 2014 and was elected and reelected in 2016, I was honored to work for Iowa as Senator Chuck Grassley's Chief of Staff. And Van Meter is my home, and I'm a seventh-generation Iowan.
What is your platform for election?
Well, we need effective leadership for Iowa right now. So much is happening right now coming out of with the pandemic going on and trying to make sure that we get the economy stronger and back to where it was about 5 or 6 months ago, and even stronger than that. And so we need somebody who has experience, who understands the needs of Iowans, both in our rural areas and our more suburban and urban areas, and who has accomplishments in getting things done. And I, in my service in the 3rd District for 4 years, I never missed a vote. I worked across party lines to make sure that we delivered what was essential for Iowans, especially sitting on the House Appropriations Committee, making sure that rural Iowa did not get left behind. And you have to be strong, and you have to have a voice, and you have to be at the table, and that's how you get things done.
What do you think is the solution for the economic recession amid the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, you know, for those who had their feet knocked out from under them because of the pandemic, both health-wise and economically, we need to get this economy back to where it was 5 or 6 months ago. And that means we need to make sure that we have those business loans. I would turn them into grants and make sure that they're not having to be repaid, because the government came along and made these actions upon us by essentially almost closing the whole economy down. And with the government's actions doing that, I think the government needs to make sure that we here in Iowa in the 3rd District are rebuilt and made whole again. And so small businesses, some of our the agricultural industries, our farmers, even our state and local governments, when they were affected in a way unlike any other way before, because of the government's actions, the government needs to make them whole again. And we need to make sure we keep taxes low. My opponent wants to repeal the tax relief from 2017, and that would raise taxes on Iowans, and we don't need that. We need to keep regulations low as well, and we need to have certainty that the playing field isn't going to change again, so people can make decisions, families, workers, small businesses, large employers, agriculture, so they know what the rules are 10 years ahead and not just guess 10 days ahead.
And what do you think of the Senate's push to appoint a new Supreme Court justice over passing a coronavirus stimulus package?
Well, I think they should be able to do both things, chew gum and walk at the same time on this. You know, the passing of Justice Ginsburg, she was a real pioneer and a pretty incredible leader and way ahead of her time. And I appreciate her service, and our prayers are with her family. And the president has an obligation through the Constitution to appoint, and the Senate has an obligation to advise and consent. And so they have said that they're going to go forward with this. I think they should go forward. If it was a Democrat president and a Democrat Senate, I wouldn't argue that they shouldn't be doing the same thing. And we do have to make sure, though, that if there's another package for COVID-19 relief, and I think there should be, it should be really targeted to those small businesses that need the help, that need to get back on their feet, some help with unemployment for our workers who are really struggling right now. They need that help. And also, with kids going back to school, making sure that protective equipment is there for kids and teachers, as well our healthcare workers who are on the front line, from our senior centers to our hospitals, to our clinics, making sure that they have the protective equipment they need and the drugs and antibiotics they need to make sure that those who get COVID-19, and this is real. I know people who it's afflicted. I know somebody who it's killed. We need to make sure that we're taking care of them, taking the precautions that are needed, opening this economy up, getting Iowans back to work. We've got the best workers in the world. We just need to know what the playing field looks like and have some certainty, and also at the same time know that we are chasing those therapies, that vaccine, to make sure that we can take care of ourselves, wear the masks, take the precautions, do the social distancing, and hold China accountable so this can never happen again.
Well, to wrap up our interview, is there anything else you'd like to say to voters before Election Day?
Well, I just want voters to know that when I served them for 4 years in the United States House of Representatives, I showed up to work every day. For 4 years, I went to every county every month, and I never missed a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives or in the House Appropriations Committee. My opponent and I, we have a real contrast on this issue. The House passed a rule. My opponent voted for it to allow other members of Congress to vote for other members of Congress. And that's the first time in the history of our republic, in our state, where a member of Congress here has given Iowa's 3rd District vote away to somebody else to cast. And when you hire somebody in Iowa, you expect them to show up. If they don't show up, you expect them to know where they were. And if they don't tell you where they were, which my opponent doesn't tell us where she was when she missed those votes, well, then it's time to find somebody else new. And I will always show up. If my opponent doesn't want to vote for this district, I will. And I'm asking for the vote on November 3rd.
We'll have more of the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine after this on KDLS. Welcome back to the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine on KDLS. I'm Dallas County News Director Brandon Shanahan. We are now going to talk with the candidates running for Iowa Senate District 10. First, we chat with Republican incumbent Jake Chapman.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself, background, experience, what people should know about you as a person?
Yeah, great. So I'm a lifelong resident of Senate District 10. My wife and I have five children and reside just north of Adel. I'm blessed to be able to work with my family on a daily basis as our family owns several businesses in the healthcare sector. Currently, I serve as the chief operating officer for one of those businesses. I'm also a certified EMT, and it's been an absolute honor for me to be able to serve the people of Iowa in this Senate district for the past two terms. Look forward to continuing to work on behalf of everyday Iowans.
And then if things do fall your way come November, what are some of your goals once you get back to Des Moines?
Yeah, I want to continue to build and accomplishments over the past 4 years. Notably, 4 years ago, we were facing a $113 million budget shortfall. And because of our policies that we enacted, doing what everyday Iowans do, we tightened our belt, balanced our budget. We took that shortfall and refilled our economic emergency funds, something I'm very proud of. Our emergency funds are completely full with nearly $800 million. Additionally, we are now looking at a substantial surplus of money when we return in January. Because of our prudent budgetary practices, Iowa was just recognized as having the most resilient budget to COVID in the entire country. We accomplished this while also passing the largest tax cut in Iowa's history. The net effect was an immediate 10% cut across the board, and additional cuts are automatically made as our budget increases. In addition to keeping our fiscal house in order and making sure Iowans can keep more of their hard-earned dollars, one of the areas of focus that I'll be focused on will be to defend, not defund, our law enforcement. These are the brave men and women who stand in that thin blue line between safety of our residents and total anarchy. While there are those who wish to defund our law enforcement, I'm proud to have increased the State Patrol's budget to the tune of $2 million this year alone. Lawlessness, anarchy, intimidation of innocent bystanders, harming our law enforcement, destroying our historical statues, and blocking our roadways have no place in Iowa. Next year, I'll be focused on strengthening our laws to prevent this type of lawlessness.
And now, just like everything else, I'm sure campaigning has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Can you educate me on what the last few months have been like for you campaigning and just getting out and spreading your ideas?
Yeah, it has been a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. Typically, we would be doing a lot of face-to-face contact, and while we are still doing that this year, well, we are doing it in a responsible way of making sure we're providing some social distancing. Obviously, we've had to change some things up with doing virtual meetings instead of in person. But by and large, as I have been out there talking with Iowans, most Iowans feel comfortable with me at their door talking with them, providing that social distancing. So it has been a little bit different, but by and large, campaigning has been very similar to what we've done in the past.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners or anything else they should know about you or your ideas?
I just say, again, it's been an honor of a lifetime to represent the people of Iowa in the Senate. And I think it would be wise for voters to consider the pre-COVID economy in Iowa. We have lowest unemployment rate in the nation. We had more job openings than people to fill them. Wages were rising and businesses were thriving. We accomplished that in less than 4 years. If given the opportunity, we will make Iowa's economy even bigger and better than ever before. I led the charge over the past 4 years, and I'll do it again. And I'm just humbly asking for your vote on November 3rd, or when you fill out your absentee request, please vote Jake Chapman.
And now we'll catch up with Democrat candidate Warren Varley. So let's just get started with this. First, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, some of your experience, and kind of what you bring to the table and what our listeners should know about Warren?
Well, thanks, Brandon. I appreciate you having me on. We need more local journalists. My name is Warren Varley. I'm running for Iowa Senate, Senate District 10. I'm a fifth-generation Iowa farmer and cattleman. My wife, Karen, and I live and work on the Adair and Guthrie County farm where I grew up and where we raised our four children, Ben, Gwen, Lena, and Millie. My wife and I are also lawyers working in the Stewart Law Firm I founded back in 1992. My nephew Colin is a newly minted teacher, and he's only looking at Minnesota and Texas because Iowa teaching positions just aren't attractive. We have to give teachers back their full collective bargaining rights, and we have to fund education at a level that catches up with inflation. And we have to use public funds for public schools if we want to stay competitive and prosperous on the world stage. My opponent wants to defund public schools, and that would destroy these important local pillars of the community. Iowa's economy is also a top concern for me. We've been underperforming of late. Education research are a top factor, but infrastructure is number two. And first and foremost in the infrastructure category is the need for fast, affordable, reliable internet access. I've worked with local cooperative and mutual phone companies who already do an excellent job of delivering high-speed internet, even in very rural areas. And I believe there's a lot we can do to give consumers better options. We also need to give attention to transportation infrastructure and our energy grid. The derecho sure made that clear. Finally, I want to maintain Iowa's high quality of life. First and foremost, that means quality, affordable, accessible health care throughout the state. And when we're talking about health care, we can't forget about mental health. That's mental health care provision has gotten short shrift for too long, but by shifting the burden away from property taxes, we can address that. There are many more goals I have, and I would just refer listeners to my website, voteforvarley.com. Ultimately, my goal is good government. That's everybody working together for common goals.
And now the COVID-19 pandemic has affected just about every part of every one of our lives. Can you kind of take me behind the scenes on what campaigning has been like over the last couple of months and how you've had to adjust and kind of some of the ways that you've met this challenge?
Well, COVID-19 has been a huge adjustment for almost everyone. I heard that the University of Iowa Hospitals is hiring extra staff, running out of beds, and unable to take patients that smaller hospitals would like to transfer. So I think public figures, including candidates like myself, need to set a good example and do what they can to slow the spread. The only way we can get ahead of this is to take measures now before flu season when things could get much worse. So we can't go door knock or have large gatherings like we normally would. I make phone calls and leave a lot of messages because folks are so sick of unsolicited calls, and we need to do something about that. I leave door hangers on people's doors, and I hold a lot of Zoom meetings. I'm holding one on gun rights on September 24. Zoom meetings really make it clear that many people do not have adequate internet service, and some people miss out altogether. With the importance of the internet for school and work, especially in the age of COVID, we really have to get that fixed.
Well, Warren, I appreciate you taking the time and speaking with us this evening. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Well, first of all, thanks again for having me on. I think you're doing a real service to democracy here and believe in the power and importance of free press. I guess I would wrap up by saying that my father, Andrew Varley, served this area in the Iowa legislature for 12 years. He set the example for service to the community that I follow today. I love Iowa and have great hopes and dreams for her future. I'm thrilled that my youngest daughter wants to come back to the farm and raise her family here. I know that stepping up above partisan bickering by engaging in civil conversations, we can come together as a community to find common ground where we can address the challenges that face us. My name's Warren Varley, and that's why I'm running for the Iowa Senate to be your senator in Senate District 10, which is Adair and Guthrie counties, most of Dallas County, and parts of Polk and Cass counties. I would appreciate your vote. Just remember, vote Varley.
We'll have more of the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine after this on KDLS. Welcome back to the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine on KDLS. I'm Dallas County News Director Brandon Shanahan. We are now going to talk with the candidates running for Iowa House District 19. And we'll continue our program first with Republican candidate Carter Nordman.
So let's just get started with this. First, Carter, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, a little bit of insight on your background, experience, just a little bit more about who you are as a person?
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for inviting me on to talk a little about myself and my candidacy. I'm a ninth-generation Iowan. My family has been in the Dallas County area, actually, for seven generations now. They've been farmers, church leaders, business owners. So my roots run really deep here in the district. I currently serve as the Vice President of Finance for one of UNI's largest student organizations, where we raise tens of thousands of dollars each year for charities here in the Cedar Valley. I own and operate a small business. I clerked in the Iowa House of Representatives for 2 years for District 19. And I've served 3 years on the Adel Parks and Recreation Board, serving my last year as chairman. So I've been very involved with the community. I love giving back to my community, so I'm looking forward to continuing to do so in the Iowa legislature.
Then if things go your way come November and you do get to serve in the Iowa legislature, what are some of your goals and what do you want to accomplish there in Des Moines?
Absolutely. You know, there's going to be a lot of things that the Iowa legislature is going to have to look at this coming session, especially with the year that we've had with COVID. Two big things that I would like to do is, obviously, we need to continue and always look on how we can lower the tax burden for Iowa families. We should always be looking for new ways to ease that burden, because Iowans know how to spend their money better than the government does, whether that be an income tax, sales tax, property taxes definitely need to be looked at. But ensuring that we have a competitive tax code, so businesses want to come here, families want to come here, should always be a top priority. And it has been a priority for House and Senate Republicans and the governor for many years now. So, and then we also always need to be looking at smart investments into Iowa's education system and our workforce. You know, sometimes the philosophy on the other side is throw as much money at a problem and it fixes itself. But I want to see strategic investments into our K-12 education, post-secondary education, trade schools, to ensure that we are preparing our students for the 21st century economy that they'll soon be entering. So that means encouraging apprenticeship programs and encouraging trade schools, because at the end of the day, college isn't for everyone, and with the economy that is building, the very strong economy, we need to ensure that we have a workforce ready to deliver.
And now, I'm sure just as everything else throughout our everyday lives, the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted your campaign and your efforts to get out into the community and spread your message. Can you kind of take me behind the scenes on what the last couple of months have been like, just trying to get out and meet as many people as possible, and kind of how you've had to adjust due to the COVID-19 circumstances?
Absolutely. Well, it's been unique for everybody, and everybody or every candidate has kind of their own way of navigating these uncharted waters. For me, I have been out door knocking in a very safe, productive, and respectful manner. You know, I wear a mask, I knock on the door, I take 6 feet back to ensure that there is enough distance between myself and the homeowner. And I've gotten great reception. I've been out there talking with voters, understanding the issues that are important to them, because at the end of the day, my job as a legislator will be to listen to them first and foremost, and then take their concerns to the Iowa House. So I have been connecting with as many voters as possible through this summer and up to now. So you know, things have definitely changed in the way we connect with voters. But at the end of the day, my campaign has been full force in ensuring that we continue to connect with them.
Then if you are elected, what's going to be priority number one for you? What's the first thing on your to-do list?
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of talked about the priorities earlier in this interview. So I would reiterate, first and foremost, as one of my top goals, is I want to be a bipartisan representative. If there's a solution that can be found with anybody on the House floor, I would be willing to work with them. But like I said, we definitely need to be taking a look at our ensuring that we have a competitive tax code across the board in every aspect of taxes. you know, with a competitive tax code, you're going to have a booming economy. As a senior at the University of Northern Iowa, I'm preparing myself to enter this workforce. And I want to be able to say that to my college classmates, or I want to hear them say that they want to stay in Iowa because there's high-paying jobs. And I think we've done a good job at doing that so far. I think there's a lot of things that we can do as far as legislation to make government more transparent for the Iowa taxpayer. And again, I want to see more strategic investments into education, like the Cedar Valley CAPS program that I've become familiar with up here in Cedar Falls when I'm up here. It's an apprenticeship program aimed at high school junior and seniors to prepare them for the workforce. So I think there's a lot of things that we'll be able to get done and accomplish when I go to the Iowa legislature.
Awesome, Carter. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and speaking with us today. Is there anything else that you'd like to get the word out about or anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'd first and foremost want to give them my website. That's www.carterforiowa.com. There you can learn more about me, and all my contact information is on there. My personal cell number is listed on there, so if anyone has any questions, comments, or concerns that they would like to talk about, I ask them to reach out because I'd love to chat with them. But as I said, my roots run very deep here in Iowa. I love my community, I love this state, and I love this country, and that's why I'm in this race. I truly believe that I can make my community proud, and I would be honored to have the trust and the vote of the people of District 19 to send me to the Iowa Legislature on November 3rd.
And up next, we'll talk with Democrat candidate Nick Miller.
So let's just get started with this. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and what people need to know about Nick Miller?
You bet. So my name is Nick Miller. I'm running for the Iowa House in Iowa House District 19, which encompasses a majority of Dallas County, minus Waukee, minus Perry, and then also jumps over into Polk County. And it covers Polk City as well as Sheldahl over in Polk County. And so it's a relatively larger district, and it's a growing district, that's for sure. It surrounds Waukee, and as Waukee starts to expand, as does Urbandale, and as do some of the other more outskirt towns such as Adel, as well as Polk City. And I'm originally from Polk City. I graduated from North Polk High School, and I am currently a student at Drake. Going into my senior year this year, and I worked up at the legislature for three consecutive sessions, and that would be two general assemblies. And when I was working up there, I was working for a rural legislator, focusing in on the issues facing agricultural professionals up in Fayette and Buchanan County, as well as just facing education issues and all of the other issues that we talked about in the campaign.
And what are some of your goals if you're reelected?
Yeah, so some of the big goals that we're kind of looking towards, I guess I forgot to mention that I'm also a bit small business owner, and which has kind of played into my legislative priorities as well. And what we are really trying to do is focus in on our Main Street businesses, our small communities, our schools, as well as trying to create a better, brighter future going forward. Our motto that we have for the campaign is invest, educate, and sustain. And within those three categories are really a lot of different points that we can talk about for hours and the issues that are facing working families as well as Iowans, working families and Iowans. And so what we are really pushing for is investing in those Main Street businesses in different capacities, whether those are tax credits, whether those are providing resources to our entrepreneurs, as well as focusing in on agriculture entrepreneur focus. As a part of my business, we've actually grown from only two people to seven people now. And throughout that time, I've learned quite a bit about what it's like to create a small business here in the state of Iowa. And so I want to take some of that experience and take that up to the state house and better be able to allow others to be able to build their business in our state, as well as support the business owners that have been around for years. So that's a little bit on the investment side of things. And then on the education portion, I want to ensure that we're giving our students, our teachers, and our administrative professionals the tools and resources that they need to provide that world-class education. Iowa used to be a model for public education not too long ago, and we have kind of lost that status over the past decade. And some of that comes from the underfunding that we have done from the legislative side, as well as just some of the general funding that we have allowed to kind of be removed from our schools. And so I really want to put a little bit more of a focus into providing the resources that our schools need, ensuring that we have equitable costs across our rural and our urban schools, making sure that if we have to bus them further, that they are able to still have the same amount in their general fund as an urban school would or a suburban school. And then the last part of that is sustainability, and doing whatever we end up doing in the next couple of years to the next decade. I want to ensure that we create it so that we are building towards the future, making sure that it's sustainable, whether that's in terms of policy, whether that's in terms of education, whether that's in terms of agriculture. There are many different avenues that we can take underneath the sustainability umbrella. And one of the big portions of what we are really looking forward to in terms of sustainability is putting our producers on the front lines of trying to make a more sustainable future going forward, whether that's in renewable resources, whether that's in new technologies that we can provide our farmers and our ag professionals. Those are the really big areas that I'm really trying to focus in on as a part of this campaign. And a lot of what we focus on in general is just being a representative for the people and ensuring that we are giving our district the representation that it deserves.
And then I'm sure that the challenging summer has affected your campaign and your efforts. Can you kind of take me behind the scene on what the last few months have been like campaigning with COVID concerns and then the derecho, and just how this unique summer has affected your campaign efforts?
Yeah, absolutely. It has been one heck of a summer, that's for sure. And that goes for the rest of the state as well. And between the derecho, as you mentioned, as well as the pandemic that we were facing of COVID-19, there are a lot of challenges that have come with campaigning amid all of these factors that have happened this summer. And so what we have really tried to do, we actually announced last May, in May of 2019, and so we were able to do some of those in-person types of things last summer, doing holding events indoors, holding bigger events with people, actually in not having to worry about health concerns, as well as doing the parade circuit, getting out into communities and being able to walk throughout the parade routes that they've got. And so this summer, we were really looking forward to being able to do that, plus the big portion of door knocking, especially in these small towns and these rural communities. We were really hoping to focus in on being able to door knock. It was a tough decision for our campaign. I took into account the opinions and advice of many individuals across the political spectrum, as well as some of the health professionals that I'm in contact with. And we really just decided that it was best for our campaign if we did not end up doing door knocking. And this is for a couple of reasons. We wanted to make sure that our volunteers were taken care of, making sure that they were safe, making sure that the people that we were meeting with were safe. The benefits did not outweigh outweigh the negatives. And so we really wanted to put safety first. And so instead, we have kind of shifted gears and focused a little bit more in on a little bit more of a remote approach to campaigning. It's kind of a throw something at the wall and see if it sticks type of summer that we've been focusing on. And so it's been interesting, that's for sure. I think that the biggest obstacle that we had was finally coming to the decision and the conclusion that we were not going to be able to door knock. That was a tough decision. I know that I wanted to get out and have those conversations with voters, and especially people that I don't know. It's really hard in this type of environment, hosting Zoom calls each and every day for work, depending on what you do. Zoom calls do not seem all that attractive at the end of the day for an event that you really necessarily didn't want to go to in person. And so it's
it's kind of been an odd shift that we have had to make, going from an in-person type of campaign to a virtual campaign. And the tough part throughout all of this has been just trying to get that communication out there and trying to push out our message. We have really focused in on a lot on actual policy, as well as getting digital media out, emails, phone calls. We will meet with voters if they reach out to us, and have a little bit more of a private conversation in lieu of door knocking virtually, just so that we're taking into account the safety, health and safety of everybody. But I think the biggest part of all of this has been just the tough avenues that we've had to take in terms of trying to figure out how we're actually going to reach those voters, especially pushing out the message that we are in the district.
And then, if the election goes how I'm sure you'd like it to go, what's going to be your first priority once you get back to the state house?
Yeah, there's a lot. There really is a lot of things that I really want to accomplish. And I think the biggest portion of that is just to be able to take action and actually start working on our newer solutions to problems that we've had for a little while. I think that those are really my big priorities if elected, that we're really going to focus in on trying to pass legislation and more common sense approaches to common solutions that we have facing the issues that are facing Iowans. And so what we are really wanting to do, and what I'm really wanting to do, is develop the relationships that I need to, both with professionals in the field as well as my colleagues on the House floor, both on the on both sides of the political spectrum, in order to get actual work done up at the State House. Having been up at the State House for the last 3 years, I have seen that bipartisanship can happen. It takes a little bit more effort. And so that's a big portion of what I would like to accomplish, if elected, is just trying to find ways that we can work, towards finding common solutions, rather than, fighting over, specific policy points. And finding newer solutions. I think that we have kind of stagnated in our ability to come up with new ideas and new legislation. I mean, at least that's what we're seeing from a news perspective, is that we are starting to just hit the status quo each year. There's no new legislation that's coming out. We'll occasionally have something profound, such as the piece of legislation that was passed in the special session this summer, which was a more perfect union. That was a big piece of legislation that did quite a bit. And so those are kind of the things that we're looking at, but not just in terms of policing, but also agriculture, healthcare, education, environment, and the economy, and small businesses and communities. And so those are pretty broadly the big things that I want to accomplish. And I really can't narrow it down to really one specific area, because I think that we have some great ideas in all sorts of sectors throughout. Obviously, a big one for me, having worked for a rural legislator, has been agricultural policies, looking at the new potential uses of industrial hemp, as well as trying to figure out if there are ways that we can better retain nutrients in our soil. That helps our farmers. It also helps our water. And I think that we have some real solutions to make that happen.
Awesome. And then in about a minute or so, anything else that you think our listeners should know?
My name is Nick Miller. I'm running for the Iowa House. I'm a small business owner and employer. And if you want a candidate who is really looking forward to working across the party line, we are a bipartisan endorsed campaign, and we have the support of elected officials all throughout the district, as well as current state representatives. We are really looking for new, bold solutions to our common problems, rather than just doing the status quo. The biggest part for me is being able to do constituent work and get actual work done for the state of Iowa.
We'll have more of the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine after this on KDLS. Welcome back to the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine on KDLS. I'm Dallas County News Director Brandon Shanahan. We are now going to talk with the candidates running for Dallas County Supervisor District 2. First, we'll talk with Republican incumbent Mark Hansen. So first question I wanted to ask is regard to just the role itself, as I'm sure that there are plenty of people who get to the ballot and they see supervisor on there, but they're not exactly sure what that means or how the supervisors impact their community. So first, can you just kind of educate me and the listener about the role of the supervisor itself and kind of what their role is in regards to our county?
Well, sure. Yeah, a county supervisor is responsible for really the fiscal management for Dallas County, setting the budget, you know, working and setting the tax rate to supply the elected officials and other managers with the money to run their services. So Dallas County provides the roads and bridges through a county engineer. The auditor would work in the elections in the real estate area. The sheriff, the EMS, and emergency management would be public safety. The treasurer works with motor vehicles and taxes. We've got the public health department, our mental health services. We work with the conservation board. They work with the bike trails and the parks. We would maintain all the vital records for the county, working with the recorder's office. And then certainly the county attorney and the courts to provide justice in Dallas County. So it's a broad range of issues that the county is required to provide on behalf of all citizens. And we are the fiscal manager in setting those budgets for those departments.
And now can you tell me just a little bit about yourself? What are some of your qualifications, experience, and what should our voters and listeners know about you as a person?
Well, I am currently a member of Dallas County Board of Supervisors, and I do represent Dallas County as a board member on the Greater Dallas County Development Alliance, New Opportunities, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the Central Iowa Workforce Development Board. I serve on the Dallas County Historic Preservation Commission, and I'm the past chair of the North Raccoon River Watershed Management Coalition. Personally, I have lived in Dallas County for more than 20 years. My wife, Tamara, grew up in Dallas Center, and my two sons both graduated from Waukee High School. I am a member of Lutheran Church of Hope, and I continue to serve as a Hope Kids Shepherd leader, and I've done that for more than 15 years.
Wow, so you've certainly worn plenty of hats throughout your time in Dallas County. What motivates you to serve the community specifically in this role?
Wanting to serve the community in this role, what motivates me?
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, I do value wanting to make a difference in wherever I live and help build and give back to the community is a core value. I do love Dallas County, and I do love the people of Dallas County. We're blessed with the beautiful Raccoon River Valley system and very fertile farmland. So part of it is to preserve and protect for future generations what we have. My own family motivates me to keep a high quality of life. And my own father was a school superintendent in the Rosemount, Apple Valley area, just south of Minneapolis, St. Paul. He started as a school superintendent with just one school, K through 12. And now in that district, which also includes Eagan, there are four high schools. So planning and for that growth is something that I kind of grew up with. And just Dallas County specifically, our 2000 census had Dallas County with 40,000 residents, and the census that we're now going through, the 2020 census, is going to have us pretty close to 100,000 residents. So 60,000 new residents, and planning for that growth has been part of what motivates me to continue to serve.
And now, what is your vision for Dallas County as it continues to grow, maybe something short-term and something long-term?
I'd say short term, to just stay on our budget targets and to continue with our elected officials and managers to deliver high quality services, to make it easier and more efficient to work with Dallas County, and certainly to maintain our quality roads and bridges and our quality of life. That's a short term. For a longer term, I'd say to keep Dallas County strong and prosperous for the future, to protect our county. We continue to see the growth, and we need to have smart growth. We have to understand that balance between urban and rural living options. We have to continue to maintain our infrastructure, both our bridges and our roads, but also our buildings and our bike trails and our parks. Also long term, just to continue low tax rate and to keep our AAA credit rating, which has saved the taxpayers a large amount of money when we've had to borrow money.
Awesome. Well, that answered all of my questions. Is there anything that I forgot to mention or anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Well, I think it might be important to know some of the other accomplishments that have occurred since I've been serving on the board. I mean, we rent our Dallas County farm to Des Moines Area Community College. That's the 570 acres north of Adel. And they use that to educate students about agriculture, and that revenue that comes in helps to maintain that farm. The north of the bike trail was added since I've been on the board. I was very involved with the bond that passed for the new law enforcement center. I was very involved with the efforts to preserve the courthouse in the downtown square of Adel, and we repurposed the buildings out at the Dallas County Farm to house our public health, our mental health, our E911 community services and emergency management. And I'd also say from an agricultural standpoint, we lowered the rural rate from 3.95 down to 2.34, and that was our promise when the local option sales tax passed, that we took the county portion to lower the rural rate. So, you know, I look forward to continuing to collaborate with our residents and our communities to keep Dallas County strong, that we're the fastest growing county in the state. And it's a great honor to serve the residents of Dallas County. I think it's still the best place in Iowa to live and work. And I'd encourage our residents to go vote. And I would ask for their vote for me to be reelected to the board, because I continue to want to serve them and work towards a prosperous Dallas County.
And now we'll chat with Democrat candidate Larry Lyon.
So first question I wanted to ask is regard to just the role itself, as I'm sure that there are plenty of people who get to the ballot and they see supervisor on there, but they're not exactly sure what that means or how the supervisors impact their community. So first, can you just kind of educate me and the listener about the role of the supervisor itself and kind of what their role is in regards to our county?
As I talk to voters here in the area, I learn how little maybe really is known about county government. And what supervisors do. And what we are, in effect, is we're three mayors that serve the county. We all have an equal vote. The interesting part is that our districts are really sort of bizarrely shaped. I serve District 2, which is the Waukee area. But even though I serve this area, the entire county, all voters in the county can vote for my position. But it's important for, I think, voters to know that Dallas, the supervisors are overseeing some vital offices like the assessor, the auditor, the county attorney, the engineer, conservation department, environmental health and public health, the recorder, law enforcement, treasurer, and zoning. That's what we do, and it's an important function, and I just want people to be aware of that.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? What are some of your qualifications and experience?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I grew up in Olwine, northeast corner of the state, a small, smaller town, much like the Perry area. Went to school at UNI, got a degree in marketing and communications. And Lori and I raised a family of three boys. All but one of them are gone from the nest now. We have one senior in high school. Lori is a teacher in the Des Moines School District and is currently serving as a school board member for the Waukee Community School District. Qualifications and experience, well, there's quite a bit of it, actually. I first joined the Waukee City Council in 1998 to serve a two-year term for a gentleman who needed to resign. And had a good experience there, and then I found that maybe my skills could be put to use with the Waukee Community School District, and I ran for the Waukee School Board and served 11 years in that capacity. And then felt the calling to get back to the City Council and rejoined the City Council back in 2015, I believe it was.
Awesome. So you're no stranger to community service, that's for sure. What motivates you to serve the community now in this role as you're looking to join the Board of Supervisors?
Well, my motivation goes way back, Brandon. When I was in sixth grade in Olwine, I was on the school safety patrol, and that was a big thing. And I noticed that cars just tended to go awfully fast past my crossing in front of Williamsburg School. And I went home and told my dad about it. And he said, let's go to the City Council and see if we can do something about it. So we did. My dad had a phrase that really stuck with me. And his phrase was, community service is the rent we pay for space on the earth. And I've really taken that to heart. And I feel like it's my obligation to serve my community. The community has been very good to me, my family, and now the county as well, as the county continues to grow.
And now, as you look ahead, and kind of what are some of your goals and your vision for Dallas County, short and long term?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked about that. I've actually posted what I call my belief statement on Lion for Supervisor on my Facebook page. It's something I've given a lot of thought to. And here's where my motivation comes from. I've been involved in growing a school district, and I've been involved in growing a city at two different periods of my life. When Lori and I came to Waukee in 1996, we were both farm rural kids, right? We wanted to live in the country. So we bought a little house right across from Eason Elementary School on 156th in Waukee. And there was a big sod farm behind us and a cornfield to the south, and we just loved it. And we couldn't figure out why they would ever build that elementary school out in the middle of nowhere like they did. Well, they knew something we didn't. They knew that this area was going to start to grow, and as it turns out, it's grown for a long time. So having helped the school district grow, having helped the city grow, I foresee this growth not stopping anytime soon. And it's time for us to have some thoughtful consideration given how the county is going to grow now. So on my belief statement, there's several major points that I'd like to convey to you. To your listeners. First of all, Dallas County is a great place to live, and I think it's going to continue to grow. Secondly, I believe that Dallas County leaders need to create a comprehensive plan for economic development. That process has actually started to some degree, but we need to carry it through. I believe that it's time to create a county manager for Dallas County. If we, for instance, Dallas County is now reaching almost 100,000 residents. If you had a community of 100,000 people, you'd have probably a mayor and a city council and a city administrator. And that city administrator would oversee and implement the vision of the city council. I think we should use a similar model for the county. I think, you know, for a long time there's been a move afoot to maybe go to 5 county supervisors. I don't know that's really necessary. I do believe what could be an effective use of taxpayer dollars would be a county manager who oversees the vision of the Dallas County Board of Supervisors and carries on the day-to-day efforts so the supervisors can concentrate more on the bigger issues like growth and economic development. I also believe that we must not lose sight of the fact that we're still a rural county. We need to make sure we're paying attention to those properly maintained farm to market roads, and maybe work harder and seeing what we can do to make sure that rural families have better access to broadband services. I believe that we should also provide affordable housing. I think we should work with the Dallas County communities to get that done. Let's see, what else have I got on my statement? I believe that turn the page here. I believe that here's a big one. I believe in civility and respect. there's no reason for me to diminish or disparage my opponent in this election. I believe he's a good guy, and I just think it's up to the residents of Dallas County to determine who's going to serve them best. I also believe that my final point is that leadership's not easy. My experience in the school board and on the city council has taught me that not every decision that I made was popular or maybe even particularly effective. But I just do my best to make decisions that I think represent everybody who's involved in the process.
Awesome. Well, that hit all of my questions. Is there anything that I forgot to mention, or is there anything else that you'd like our listeners to know?
Let's see. This is a very important election to everybody involved, from the city level all the way to the national level. I encourage everybody to vote. I'm confident in the process. I'm confident in Dallas County Auditor and Commissioner of Elections and their staff who serve us so well. I believe that they're going to be pushed to their limits, but I know at the end of the day, they're going to do the right thing and represent us well and make sure that we all receive accurate results in the end.
We'll have more of the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine after this on KDLS. Welcome back to the special edition Meet the Candidates in-depth news magazine on KDLS. I'm Dallas County News Director Brandon Shanahan. We're now going to talk with the candidates running for Dallas County Auditor. First, we'll speak with Republican incumbent Julia Helm.
So first question I wanted to ask, and it's more a little bit more about the position itself, as I'm sure that there are people who are going to show up to the ballot and start going through it, and they know a lot of the positions, you know, presidents, representatives, senates, all that stuff, but once they get to auditor, they may not be too familiar with what that role is within our county and how important that is. So can you kind of educate me and the listener on what exactly a county auditor is?
Yes, the Dallas County Auditor is the foundation of county government. This office is the custodian of all election, county, and real estate records, current and historical. We are also the real estate and taxation manager. All city, school, township budgets are reviewed in the auditor's office as part of the taxation process. City and county urban renewal plans, tax increment financing, TIF are all handled through the county auditor's office. All real estate transactions, deed, county plat, subdivision, splits go through the auditor's office. The county auditor does accounts payable for the county and payroll. We also work with the county drain. And of course, the county auditor is the commissioner of elections and the county registrar of voters. We also do miscellaneous things, cigarette licenses, liquor licenses in the county, and numerous things, other things.
Awesome. And now, as we kind of shift to a little bit about yourself, can you kind of educate me on some of your qualifications and experience?
Sure. I've lived in Iowa my whole life. I grew up in Eastern Iowa. I graduated from the University of Northern Iowa with a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in communications. I have worked as a public relations professional at West Central Co-op. I also worked at Drake University and was promoted at Drake to alumni director. So I've managed people and numerous jobs I've had. My husband and I, we have lived in Dallas County since 1997. I had worked in the auditor's office prior to being elected. I worked in payroll, accounts payable. I worked in real estate, and I have taught the precinct election officials. I've been training them for a long time to work the polls. But since taking office in 2017, I have revamped several processes in our office to include more oversight and cross-checking. I also have united the real estate staff and the election staff together so in the same building so we can cross-train to better serve the public.
Awesome. And it sounds like you've worn many hats throughout your career. So what motivates you to serve the community specifically in this role?
This role is just, I feel, is vitally important in the county. We maintain accurate real estate records for the residents in our county, and I know that's kind of behind the scenes, but it is so important. That is the day-to-day in the auditor's office. But also keeping accurate voter registration records is a day-to-day activity, which is vitally important. And of course, being a part of our country's democracy by conducting accurate elections is extremely important and satisfying as a public servant.
Awesome. Well, that answered all my questions. Is there anything else you think the listeners should know about you, or just anything else that you'd like to get the word out about?
I just am asking for people's votes. I, you know, just started down this road of my career 4 years ago, and I want to continue. I mean, we're absolutely looking forward to the future. Our county is continuing growing, and we want to be a part of all those things I just said about the real estate growth and the election growth. But we're looking at the census in 2021, and we will be redistricting, and I really want to be a part of that for our county. I want to utilize my experience from the past to help move that forward. So it's an exciting time to live in Dallas County, and I want to be a part of it.
And now we'll speak with Democrat candidate Michael Kern.
So first question I wanted to ask, and it's more a little bit more about the position itself, as I'm sure that there are people who are going to show up to the ballot and start going through it, and they know a lot of the positions, you know, presidents, representatives, senates, all that stuff, but once they get to auditor, they may not be too familiar with what that role is within our county and how important that is. So can you kind of educate me and the listener on what exactly a county auditor is?
Well, the county auditor, the most visible is the election process and administering that. So I know they've been working probably since August, if not July, you know, organizing, setting up precinct locations. So I know that takes a lot of work. The next step is to start getting the absentee ballot requests in and recording that, that they've been working on that for several months. And then the new ballots will be coming out next week on the 5th. But that is the most visible part of it, is the election process, making sure all the ballots are counted and securely recorded. And that also involves, you know, not general elections like this, but, you know, school board elections, bond referendums. So it's a year-round process that they have to go through.
Now, focusing a little bit more now on the candidate, so can you tell me a little bit about yourself? What are some of your qualifications, your experience, and what should your listeners know about you as a person?
Sure. Well, I've had a lot of government experience and corporate experience with insurance, benefits administration, legislative experience, local government experience, and financial services. I worked originally from Illinois. I've been an Iowan for going on 21 years now. And that has been mostly my work has been, you know, in financial services and insurance and benefits administration. That's what I'm doing now for my regular job. The political, I worked for Illinois General Assembly. I was a legal or a research analyst for several years, and then I worked in housing and economic development for the city of Springfield before coming to Iowa. So a lot of experience in government. The biggest challenge that I saw here with Dallas County is it's we've been growing. We'll continue to grow. The government's going to have to change a little bit. We're not just, it's not going to be a small county coming by the end of the next decade. So there's a lot of growth coming here, and we're not going to be Polk County, but we're going to be a much bigger county, and we're going to have to adapt to being a big county.
Awesome. And now, so it's obvious that they've worn many different hats and many different areas of expertise. What motivates you to serve the community specifically in this role?
It was the public service has always been a big part for me. I had considered doing it when I was younger. Didn't pursue it. It just wasn't good for us at the time. I see upon this. I've been asked to consider making a run or something, and this one came up, and I jumped right to it. I didn't get an MBA. I got a master's in public administration, so it was government administration, government service is what has been my motivating factor in life.
Awesome. Well, that answered all of my questions. Before or while I have you here, is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners or anything else they should know about you or what your vision is for Dallas County?
Well, as I said, the visions are is that we need someone that's worked outside of government. It's good to have that government experience. It's also good to have that mix of corporate experience. And with my background in the benefits administration, because that's a big part or a minor part in the background part of the auditor's position. They handle the payroll and tax deposits and so forth. So there is an administrative side that nobody sees. And a little bit of oversight that we can provide. I just want to be a part of Dallas County and help guide it as it grows and becomes one of the major growth centers and job producers in the state of Iowa.
You've been listening to the special edition Meet the Candidates Forum on the Raccoon Valley Radio Network. If you missed any of this program or would like to hear it a second time, you can listen on demand at raccoonvalleyradio.com 24/7, 365 at your convenience. The Raccoon Valley Radio Network news team, proud to be the one to count on for today's local news and information on the air and online as well at raccoonvalleyradio.com.